since 1971.
Oh, yeah, okay. This is, where am I? Oh, there I am. It's 2:55 Farmer Jack Savings Time as we save on Imperial Margin. 1 pound quarters, 2 for only $1 at good old Farmer Jack's.
The home of rock and roll throughout the 70s and into the 80s.
Every Friday night you can dance as WRIF's own Carl Coffey spins your favorite rock and roll on Plymouth Rock Saloon's new sound system, complete with light effects.
Detroit's only real rock and roll radio station in the decade of the 90s.
I'm Ann Carlini. Hey, it is a Midas Pistons Hour. Be caller number 20 at 298-6360. And those Cleveland Cavalier Pistons tickets are yours.
If it rocks, it's on the Riff in the early part of the 21st century.
Hey, Taylor.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. I like this. We got two rock and roll blonde chicks talking rock and roll. I love it.
I like it. I love it.
For nearly 50 years, we are, have been, and continue to be 101 WRIF. Here is Mike Staff and special guest Screamin' Scott Randall.
Welcome to the podcast, The History of WRIF. I'm your host, Mike Staff. I had the privilege of being on the Riff for 14 years, from 1992 to 2006. And we have been having a blast, and it's been my privilege to have conversations with the people and the personalities that have made the Riff for the last 50 years. And if you're listening for the first time today, I invite you to check out some of our previous podcasts. We just released a really great two-part conversation with Drew Lane from the Drew and Mike Show. We've also had conversations with Arthur P., Ken Calvert, JJ and the Morning Crew, Karen Savelli, Meltdown, Costand, and a whole lot more. And on the podcast today is honestly one of the nicest guys I have ever met in my life. Screamin' Scott was on the Riff for almost 24 years. Scotty has earned his audience, not only from his incredible enthusiasm on the air and his love of radio and his passion for rock and roll, but also by pressing the flesh, as we say, by making it a point to personally meet his listeners every chance he got. If you've met Screamin' Scott, then I am absolutely certain you like him too. Welcome to the podcast, Scotty.
Damn. Now that's an intro.
Thank you. Hey. This is kind of cool. We have Mark Fellhauer engineering. We have Hightower videotaping. Drew's walking around someplace since we are in the Drew and Mike studio. So it's kind of like a reunion.
I always wanted to say that. Mark!
Oh, everyone wants to say that.
Mark!
Well, that's funny because when I think of you, I always think of the hay.
Hey!
And then the dog bark. It's like the most genuine or spot on dog bark, and we'd hear it down the hall.
Like, yeah, I think I just scared the crap out of Drew's dog. It was all really nice and friendly. I started barking at it, and now he's like, he doesn't want to talk to me.
You have fooled everyone with your dog bark. When did you know that you had that gift?
To keep myself entertained as a kid, I would just
really
come up all different thousands of different sound effects.
Interesting.
Because I always carry this one, along with me for.
Ah, that's just
just for fun. I got my own little. I've been using it as on my podcast and something, but my whistle. The whistle. I used to work at roller rinks when I first started DJing, so it was DJ / floor guard.
Mm-hmm. Ooh,
and important. I was at one of those roller rinks with, if you forgot your whistle, you got a demerit. It's like, ooh. So somehow or another, my father really knew how to whistle real loud. So I taught myself, it's like, if you can gargle, why not take that same idea and blow the air out with no liquids and produce a sound like,
Jesus. It sounds just like a whistle.
Yeah. I screwed up a WNBA basketball game at the Palace one time.
I believe it.
Tom Watson said, don't you ever do that in my building again.
That's awesome. Well, one of the things, Scotty, that I think you and I have in common big time is that we have both wanted to be a radio DJ since we were kids.
And yes.
Like, I knew when I was like 4 years old. When did you first realize you had the radio bug?
Well, around that same time, my parents had bought a Fisher receiver, and it only had FM on it, just the FM band. So I was introduced very, very young to all these stations, and one of the first voices, of course, was Arthur Penhall.
Isn't that crazy?
Back then, it was just like, hey, you want a shaggin' wagon? You're doing these commercials for conversion vans and stuff, but it was that voice and then all the other voices that were associated with Riff way, way, way back.
Right.
It's like, wow, this is cool. I get to hear my favorite music, and these guys are some incredibly great, talented voices.
Well, you had the luck, I guess, to be going going to Warren Cusno High School because they were one of the few radio stations or one of the few high schools with a radio station.
Yeah, I did that for 3 years.
That's just awesome.
To hone my craft, and I still wasn't ready.
Because I had this really, really high voice back then that just didn't work.
And then what?
That's when I met Dick Kernan, who was with Riff, associated with Riff. And he came in and told me, hey, you got talents, but you need the skills. I had no idea how to put a resume together or a tape or what to do or how to ask a radio station, hey, hire me. I want to play records. Hey. So I went to Specs Howard, graduated from there. And
so did Dick come in to Cusno High School and talk to Cusno High School?
Him, Doug Podell.
Really?
I think even Costan at one time or another. Just a plethora of different Riff personalities. Even Wheels was starting out at that time.
Wow, cool.
So it was just great. You know, high school radio and seeing all my radio heroes just pop in and go, hi, I play records and I make lots of money.
It is really funny about the way your voice can change over the years because when I listen to my early tapes, it's like my voice was a couple of octaves higher. And then I don't know what happened, like a nut dropped or something when I was 23 and all of a sudden I got a voice. I don't get it.
Here was my stupid idea. My two radio heroes growing up, of course, Arthur Pinello, because he was 87 Riff Rock and Roll over degrees. Bye-bye. And then Alan Allman with Pillow Talk. And I thought, jeez, if I could get a job like that, just think of the chicks I would get.
What a gig.
So I immediately started like, if I start smoking now, I could have this incredible voice in just a few years. Little I know that they didn't tell you that they had no warning labels on cigarettes back then, so it was cool. I started off with Newport cigarettes, quick, easy plug there, and went to Winston's and then finished off with Marlboro Reds.
It was just to get your voice deeper, is that it?
Yeah, yeah.
Seriously.
Seriously. Because if you listen to the tapes of my first actual radio station I worked at in the depths of Ohio, Wapakoneta, Ohio, it's really, really strange how high the voice was. But it eventually came down.
Yeah, it's weird. So you went to Specs Howard right out of high school, and then your first job was in Ohio?
Ohio. Wapakoneta, home of Neil Armstrong.
Every town has its thing.
It was a hot hit station, and it was me bringing on it's so funny. The owner of the station was also the program director, and he pulled me aside one day and said, hey, Scott, if you want to make it in this business, you have to learn to talk like a DJ. I said, you mean I have to sound like a strip club guy?
That's funny.
You got to talk just like this and introduce the records. And so the station was WAXC in Wapakoneta, Ohio. It's Wapakoneta / Lima, Ohio. So I was playing bands like John Parr and early Madonna, and it was like, it was pretty cool.
That kind of reminds me of
Kajagoogoo.
It's kind of like Howard Stern, WNBC.
But, I mean, can you just imagine, like, hi, this is Scott Randall, and this is Kajagoogoo.
Do you remember how much you got paid for that first radio gig?
It was very, very low.
I figured
almost as low as my first morning gig.
So how long were you at that station in Ohio?
The first one was only a year. And believe it or not, at just about that same time, Ann Carlini was across town at a station in St. Mary's, Ohio, which was really close. She came back, and she was kind of like my connection when I came back home. And when I came back home, I got a call from a station owner that lives in Michigan but had a station in Indiana. And it's Jeff Somerville was his name. And the Somerville Broadcasting Corporation was really big around the Port Huron and up north area. So his son had a station, Jeff Somerville. And he had this idea of doing an oldie station. Got the job there. It's like, wow, this is cool. I can really hone my craft and get a complete history of what rock and roll was from 1955 all the way up to 1979.
Sure.
And it was just amazing. I'm hearing the Doris Troy version of Just One Look going, oh, wait a minute, Linda Ronstadt wrote that in the 70s. That can't be. No, that's the original. It's like, oh, Twist and Shout. Who are these Isley brother people?
Yeah,
like,
weird.
You know, the Beatles wrote this one. You know, so I got a complete history. And boy, I stayed there a good 8-9 years.
Wow.
And some really, really, really fun times in Indiana, other than just being so flat and not much to do. We were so close to Fort Wayne. I mean, the exciting thing was, hey, did you hear the news? We're getting a Taco Bell. I lived in Decatur, Indiana. So for me to go to a Taco Bell, it took 15 miles to drive to Fort Wayne to see the first Taco Bell.
Because oh, man.
I always remembered it back in Michigan in 1982. We'd skip school just to go to the local Taco Bell at 13 in Hoover.
Mm-hmm.
So this was great. It's like watching all these people from Indiana going, wow, what's a Taco Bell?
So I remember you telling me once you had to do hog reports. Was that
oh, yeah.
Indiana?
Yeah. No, that was actually Ohio.
Ohio.
I did the overnight, midnight to 6, and just around 4:30 in the morning, I had to get reel-to-reel tape machines and get some satellite to get ready for the I'm trying to remember the – there was a certain network that – it was just like NASCAR, but it was all about hogs.
What does a hog report sound like? What are you even reporting on?
Well, hog futures this way, the company are up 9/10. Oh, okay. Corn futures are going – and again, it was just like NASCAR, but they were talking about stuff farmers knew.
Crazy.
And – trust me, you didn't want to piss off a farmer.
Well, and that's one of the things about local radio,
holy
too.
Cow.
That was important to that audience.
Yeah, yeah. I would mispronounce. It was All Glaze County, right? I was always joking, like, Hog Glaze County. They get a joke, and you get some pissed off farmer. Hey, don't you be doing that down here. It's All Glaze, like an all glazed donut. You say it right. Say it now.
So,
and I was like, whoa, okay, dude, it's okay.
It. So you're in Ohio for like 8 or 9 years. How'd you get back?
No, Ohio was just for a year.
Oh, and then Indiana 8 or 9, and then back to Detroit.
Right.
And how did you get back to Detroit? Like, what brought you back?
Truthfully, stuff I thought it was enough time where I wanted to come back because all those years I was in Indiana, all the radio legends had the jobs. So there was nothing open at the time. I had a really serious heartbreak over this girl.
Aw.
She left me for Gary Richrath of REO Speedwagon. I'm serious. It was a hard time for me. I had introduced her at the Fort Wayne Memorial Coliseum, and she got to know Gary Richrath. And this is my first time ever having a quote-unquote fiancé. So after the concert, I'm looking all over for her, and Gary Richrath goes, hey, your fiance left with Gary. They're on their way to the next town.
Ouch.
I was like, oh, heartache. Oh.
You know, if anyone else tried telling me this story, I would think that they're full of shit. But coming from you, I know it's true. You find yourself in situations like this.
It was so tough, man. I can't tell you. I was devastated. So I called a few friends back home, and they said, hey, you're more welcome to come home. Stuff will get you a place and get you all set up. And then, believe it or not, as soon as I got settled in, Joe Scroy, who I worked for at New York, New York, in the early days of the bar business in 1982, he called me and, yo, Scott, there's a revolving door here. You're more than welcome to come back and DJ. And it's like, wow, cool. So that's how I got to the Ritz.
Got it.
And so I was working at the Ritz and putting out resumes trying to get a job. And that's where I met you.
Yeah, I met you there in 92.
Yeah,
but you were a very well-respected rock bar DJ.
Rock bar.
I mean, weren't you voted best DJ or something?
And I think it was 92. They didn't have – I think it was the Motor City Music Awards and then the Detroit Music Awards. They merged. Mm. The year before they merged, I won for best club DJ. It's like, hey, you know, I wasn't scratching or anything. You know, I might scratch the Van Halen album when I put the needle on it wrong.
Right.
You know? But somehow or another, I got this prestigious award.
Well, and in the 90s, the Ritz, I mean, there were other bars that were having rock, but it was Ritz was really the epicenter of the rock scene.
It was a big battle between the Ritz and Harpo's Concert Theater.
Yeah, but Harpo's was still on its way down a little bit, I think, wasn't it? I mean, I don't remember as many big names being in Harpo's.
I still remember seeing Ronnie James Dio there many, many times. And the list of bands that had played there. That was a big radio thing. When I was in high school, it was Riff and I forget, maybe it was ABX or something. They had announced, we got a secret concert coming your way, but we can't tell you who it is yet. Stay tuned. We'll let you know. And back then, Blue Oyster Cult was like the big band. Blue Oyster Cult. Uh-huh. So they come under this assumed name. When they would stay at a hotel room, believe it or not, Blue Oyster Cult's name was Soft White Underbelly.
Hmm.
For some strange reason. So just imagine going to Harpo's and seeing Soft White Underbelly up on the marquee, and a special hometown band named Paradox would open up. Hmm. And all of a sudden, the last minute is like, it's Blue Oyster Cult! Get down to Harpo's now! And it was just packed.
Oh, that's awesome.
But between them and the Ritz, I focused mostly on the Ritz because all the great concerts that came in there. There was a manager, Joe Neoport, that was just so keen on booking some of the top acts that come through.
Yeah, I was thinking of
everybody.
Like, okay, so I can give you my quick list of mm-hmm. what I can remember. The Black Crowes, I know they're there a couple of times. Their first time, they're opening up for ZZ Top, and I think they were pretty wasted. And I still meet people that get pissed off at that show because they're like, man, I saw them and they sucked because they're wasted. David Lee Roth, actually, we have a picture of you and me and Drew and mm-hmm. David Lee Roth. Peter Wolf.
Oh,
Robin
yeah.
Trower.
Oofa Goofa Mamba Toofa.
Yeah. Collective Soul.
Yep.
Slash's Snake Pit was there. Izzy Stradlin and the Juju Hounds. Remember? Izzy, of course, from Guns N' Roses as well. Stray Cats, Warrant, Great White, Dokken, mm-hmm. all those guys.
Tesla
was there.
That was a big one because that night, I remember the Tesla show, they kicked Tommy out of the band. They told him, like, hey, no more drugs. And again, it was a riff gig, and we're all waiting. It's like, what do we do now? It's like, well, we're going to go on with the show. Yeah. And they went on without him.
Yeah, had a four-man band.
Oh, and then some incredibly weird bands. There was a band, I remember it was a riff night. I don't know if you remember the band Life, Sex, Death.
God, I have a vague memory of it.
Their big hit was a song called Some Fucking Shit Ass. Some fucking shit ass. Some fucking shit ass. And it became this big hit at MTV, but they all blurred it, of course. Commercial. They blurred it, everything out. And I don't even know if the riff, I don't even believe the riff ever played it, but it was just big. And this lead singer, name was Stanley. we're trying to look for him. It's time to go on. He's digging in the dumpster in the back. And they had to get some bouncers to go get him out of the dumpsters and bring him on stage. And everyone's like, whoa, boy, this show stinks.
You know, what was he looking for?
He was just, that was his persona.
Wow, weird.
Just strange guy.
Coming up.
When I was offered the position, they brought me in the office. All the DJs at Z-Rock had funny names. There was Loud Debbie Dowd, Ward Cleaver, mm-hmm. Dave Bolt.
Yeah.
And so they just said, you're going to be screaming Scott. And I'm like,
they told you.
Yeah. I'm like, okay. Well, it kind of beat the last nickname I had in Indiana.
Which was,
believe it or not, just Biffer. But I went by Biffer, but then the station owner put a tag onto it. So I was always known as Captain Biff.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is the history of 101 WRIF. The podcast.
I'm the legend of Christian Woman, 102.7 The Motor City Z-Rock. Screaming Scott here with you on a Fat Tuesday. Well, it's not actually Fat Tuesday, but heck, eat anything you want. I don't care.
Here is Mike Staff and special guest Screaming Scott Randall.
The local music scene at that time was just on.
It was. Now, that's when you met Kid Rock, right? Kid Rock was just kind of hanging out at the Ritz.
I had no idea who Kid Rock is. I worked in the International Talent Agency. That was the booking agency inside the Ritz, along with Joe Neoport. So I was kind of like the errand boy. Joe would go, hey, get Bob on the phone. He would come in and go, wife beater t-shirt.
<That's funny. laughs>
I never saw him with the ice cube hat, hair.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. The kid play hair or whatever.
He always just... He never wore a hat in his blonde hair. He's like, what up? You know? And he remembers it all these years later. He remembers seeing me there. And, you know, we had a pretty good friendship still to this day.
He, what was interesting about him is that he didn't, like, play there a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, he would focus it in and he'd play, like, 2-3 times a year, and I think he really had a good idea with that.
Oh, yeah, but he'd do matinees also, like, on Sundays.
Yeah, all-age matinees, yeah, because he would be in parking lots of high schools passing out his cassettes.
And it was packed. He was just amazing. He was, man, he really knew how to promote himself.
Sure did.
And the shows were incredible. Even as stripped down as they were, was just mind-blowing.
Yeah.
I mean, just the musicianship that went along with it. Yeah,
so you had a very interesting kind of radio journey because you left Indiana. You did not have a radio job back in Detroit.
Right.
You came back. You're like, okay, I'll get there, get settled in, find something. You found this great gig at the best rock club in Detroit. You were there for, what was that?
Probably a few years. A
couple of years, yep. And then Z-Rock came knocking.
Right.
And so tell me about how you got on Z-Rock and in the mornings.
That was very unique because the gentleman, his program director name was Joe Bevilacqua. But I'd always see the Z-Rock people come in with Steve Black. And I'd known Steve Black. And got a kinship going, and Joe would always come in. He goes, man, you've got an incredible voice. Did you ever think of being in radio? And I was like, at that time, I was just like, yeah, sure, dude. Yeah. But he kept talking to me, and we'd have a few drinks and talk some more. And then one time he came in and says, hey, got this idea. I've been talking with Steve and a couple of his. I got a proposition for you. How would you like to do mornings in Detroit? And I'm like, yeah, right. Me? A morning? Okay.
Yeah, right. You don't have to think too hard about that.
Well, the thing is, I didn't even ask how much I'd be paid. It's just like, I think I set a record for the lowest paid morning man in the Motor City. And on top of it, the show was from 5:30 until 11.
That's a long air
shift. It was long.
Yeah.
And it was just me. The company couldn't afford a sidekick or anything.
Right.
So I had a bunch of stupid sound effects.
Refresh my memory. I'm trying to think. Z-Rock came in. Were they all like syndicated when they first came in, and then they just opened up a couple of day parts?
I think the main Z-Rock started in Flint. I think there was an AM station. I believe Steve Black would know more about that, how the or the. I just knew that they had popped on. It was 102.7, and the studios were at the 850 building that you'd always pass by when you're going by Oakland Mall.
Mm.
You'd look to the left. Here's this giant 850 building. You're like, it's like Z-Rock. And they were just totally play just about anything.
Well, anything hard. It was hard.
I had never heard Pantera on the radio, but I seen them live at the Ritz, and I was like, wow, this station's playing Pantera. This is pretty cool. And you're going to give me a job, and I could play Pantera at 5:30 in the morning? This is awesome.
Unheard of.
So I did that, and I did the best of my ability. And in fact, going up against the Drew and Mike show.
Yeah, that's a pretty tough, time, that's a tough order.
I learned a lot of respect for them just watching them or listening to them, listening to the show. And it gave me some ideas to do my own things. I would do Cop or Not. We'd call up to see if there was a cop in a donut shop and we'd win a prize. Now, I don't know if I was ripping that off from Drew and Mike, but I'm pretty sure they had something comparable to that.
Sure.
And just come up with just really stupid games. You know, guess the number of change in my pocket and it's yours. Call up. There was one game. We did a tattoo. What would you do for $1,000? And guy said, "I'll tattoo the Z-Rock logo on my ass."
And what do you get for it?
It had to be the size of the sticker. And you remember a Z-Rock sticker?
Oh yeah.
And he did it for $1,000. And
And he's got that on his ass.
Probably still
right
around
now.
There right now. I mean, that too tattoo has probably got him immune from COVID.
Well, maybe. Because
it was done right in my studio.
I guarantee that $1,000 has been gone for a long time.
It was just yellow and black. So now he's got this yellow and black. And people are going, hey, if you hurry up and stop and wash it off, it'll come off. That's permanent there.
So you got the Screaming Scott moniker when Z-Rock came on. Whose idea was Screaming Scott?
When I was offered the position, they brought me in the office. All the DJs at Z-Rock had funny names. There was Loud Debbie Dowd, Ward Cleaver, Dave Bolt.
Yeah.
And so they just said, you're going to be Screaming Scott. And I'm like,
they told you.
Yeah. I'm like, okay. Well, it kind of beat the last nickname I had in Indiana.
Which was,
believe it or not, just Biffer. But I went by Biffer, but then the station owner put a tag onto it, so I was always known as Captain Biff.
Mm, yeah, Screaming Scott is way better than that.
So I had to live down to being Captain Biff for so many years, and when they said Screaming Scott, I said,
sure.
I hope it goes over.
I always thought it was odd because you didn't really scream.
No.
On the air. I was expecting, like, I heard the moniker. I'm like, oh, boy, this is going to be an interesting version of Scott.
Well, do you want to hear a clip from YouTube 1994?
Sure.
Have you ever seen this?
I don't believe I have. Here you go.
Burger and fries.
Do you remember this at all?
I believe I got a really unique porn mustache.
I'm the legend of Christian Woman, 1027 of Motor City Z-Rock. Screaming Scott here with you on a Fat Tuesday. Well, it's not actually Fat Tuesday, but heck, eat anything you want. I don't care. Anyway, happy heavy metal birthdays. That Yamaguchi girl, that ice skater and stuff, it's her birthday today. Sue from Wasteland celebrating hers today. John from Roseville. And Steve from Mount Clemens is celebrating the big 2-1 today. Be safe. Hey, if you're going to get piled, with the alcohol, but have somebody else do it. Okay, Steve? Happy heavy metal birthday to each and every one of you from the one and only heavy metal birthday station, 1027 Z-Rock.
That's cool to have that. Good find, Mark Feldman.
Yeah, that's like four or five pots of coffee.
That's good.
In the morning.
It's cool to have that.
Is my voice really that high?
I know. That really did stand out. Now, there's two women in this studio, too.
Yeah, they're both
very cute. A gentleman who taped that was a kid that I went to high school radio with. And he kept that clip and he uploaded. He's like, oh, thank goodness.
Yeah, video wasn't actually as accessible then as it is right now.
I remember that day vaguely because the whole idea of him coming down and videotaping is not because Screaming Scott was there. It was like, no. He was trying to get, he's like, hey, remember me from high school radio? Alice Cooper was coming in to do my show for a week with me. And that was a treat because he would go around just like Ted Nugent would and would take over a station for a week. Except when Ted Nugent came, I wasn't there.
Right.
I had different views on guns back then, which I've changed over the years, Ted. But back then, he didn't want me as a sidekick. So he'd always go on by himself. And it was a very entertaining show.
Well, and Ted, not too many people can say that they lost their job to Ted Nugent.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what happened in 1996, right?
Correct.
When they Z-Rock flipped everything and called it the Bear, and they kind of designed their whole format around Ted Nugent.
Yeah, I did one show for the Bear, and it was they put me in sales, for God's sake. Went from mornings,
sales.
And they put me in Z-Rock / Bear sales, and we didn't have a real big sales department, so I believe the gentleman's name is Greg Elke. I'm trying to remember. All the account reps that were at the station gave me the accounts that they didn't want. So guess who got all the strip clubs? I got two strip clubs in Canada and then all the rest on 8 Mile. I think I owned 8 Mile. And now I know why that they didn't want them. To try to get paid from a strip club owner was hard enough.
And you don't get paid until the station gets paid.
They love receiving money, but giving out money, that's a little different.
How did you find out that Ted was coming in and you were on your way out?
There was a couple meetings that came in because, for one, the secretary of Z-Rock at the time was our, like, Lonnie Anderson. Her name was Karen, and oh, my God, she was gorgeous. And she would go bonkers, and she couldn't keep a secret when it came to Ted Nugent coming. Ted Nugent's coming. She was so wonderful. But that I had found out, and then kind of putting the pieces together, then we had this meeting, and it was known. And it's even written in Steve Black's book. Steve Black has a book which he said some wonderful things about the transition.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew it hurt me, and it did. But then as you put the scenarios, like, hey, they had to get Ted Nugent to replace me.
Right. That's an interesting – if you got to get fired, that kind of, like, I guess, helps a little bit. By the way, if you want to hear the stuff about Z-Rock and the transition and stuff like that, I did do a history of WRIF with Steve Black, and that's available online right now. Hey, just real quick, didn't you date Ted Nugent's daughter? Did that really happen?
It was one date.
One date? How'd you get a date with Ted Nugent's daughter? Is that
she
Sasha?
Actually, no, it wasn't Sasha. It was, I believe it was Star.
Okay.
Star. Star wanted to be an account for a salesperson.
Mm.
So she came into the studio one time. We got to talking, and I said, hey, would you like to catch, you know, a show or some dinner sometime? And she said, yes. She's like, great. So we went out in Royal Oak. And,
way to move in on Ted Nugent's daughter.
Yeah, but that was the thing. You know, I wasn't thinking of Ted's guns at the time. So immediately the next day, I do my, you know, still the Z-Rock show. And she comes in. She goes, Scott, can I talk to you? And I said, yeah, sure. I said, hey, I had a great time, you know, the other night. And she goes, I talked to my father, and he says I can't see you anymore. And I'm like, why? He's like, don't ask why. Just I can't see you anymore.
Talk about rejection.
And I didn't even make a move on her.
Not only
I was a complete gentleman.
He takes knowing your job.
Knowing he had guns. He had lots of guns. When he come in the studio, in his boot, there was a gun.
Oh, yeah.
On his back holster, he had a gun. He smiled, he had a gun. And can you just imagine? It's like, meh.
A little intimidating.
You dated my daughter? It's unnatural.
Coming up.
Came to the actual day of the wedding. We had this small little church, or not church, but just this place where you have weddings on Harper. And all of a sudden, boom, here's this limo popping out. Art pops out, and he is decked to the nine with the collar.
Oh, yeah. Collar. He got the collar in the mail along with the certificate to marry
you. His hair was not pulled back. It was full. Had the slash top hat, you know, and those purple little glasses.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, just a minute. Do you, Scott, take this woman? Sure. You take her? Huh?
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
50 years of rock and roll radio history.
If ever there was a night to get out and party, this is the night.
Tonight, the Ritz, Metro Detroit's number one concert club, rocks with a special four-band lineup that'll blow you away.
This is the History of 101 WRIF, the podcast.
Ring the Ritz at 778-8150. This is the night of rock and roll you don't want to miss.
Here is Mike Staff and special guest Screamin' Scott Randall.
So, it didn't take you long to end up on Riff. How'd you get on Riff then after you lost your job on Z Rock?
Funny story. When I was still hanging out at the Ritz, you know, back and forth, just wondering what my next move was going to be while I was still at the Bear / Z Rock. And I went to the front bar, which everybody knows at the Ritz, there was this great bartender named Sandy.
She was great.
Everybody knows Sandy. She was just so wonderful.
Yep.
And so I was up there, and it was a Riff night, believe it or not. So I'm up there with Doug Podell and Sue Podell, his wife. And Sue turns to me and goes, hey, Scott, let's do some Jaeger. And I go, great, fantastic.
Speaking my language.
So Doug's talking to somebody with his back to Sue and I. And she goes, I'd like to propose a toast. Congratulations to your job at Riff. And Doug turns around and goes, you're not supposed to say this. And then Doug pulls me aside and says, meet me in my office Monday, 3 p.m. I said, okay. So I go Monday, 3 p.m., see him, and he goes, here's what I got for you. I've got part-time. You know, put you in the club nights, because back then when Riff talks about on club nights, there was club nights 7 nights a week.
Incredible.
We found so many excuses just to have a party.
And it paid our rent big time.
Big time.
Yeah.
Great. So he said, part-time, and then I guarantee within a year, even sooner, we'll put you full-time. I said, deal. He goes, you've got 1 hour to go quit Z-Rock the Bear and come back. I'm going,
sounds like Doug.
Boom, I jumped, went to the 850 building, saw Joe Bevlock, was like, I got this job, I got to go. he puts out a memo. Screaming Scott has gone to the dark side. Wish him well. I still have that.
That's a compliment.
He's gone to the dark side. We wish him well.
How long were you part-time before he got full-time?
Actually, it didn't happen too long. It was like 5-6 months. Mm-hmm. There was a jock named Kelly Walker who could burp incredible.
And she was so cool, too.
Closest. I couldn't beat her. And that's pretty talented. If you can out-belch me, that's talent. So Kelly Walker left. So that made Meltdown from the overnight to seven to midnight. So that opened that up. And so I got the overnight. So it became late night overnight with Screaming Scott.
And that's a pretty interesting audience, isn't it? Oh, the middle of the night audience is it's definitely more laid back.
In the wintertime, it was the plow truck drivers. Oh, my God, they just loved me. and just during the summer, it was just summer parties. You know, hey, we're by the campfire.
Right.
Blaze a tune, man.
And you did third shifter parties, too.
Oh, yeah. Those were just an amazing invention. Thank God I never had to drive from those. There was always somebody driving the riff van. But here's the a third shifter party is a lot of the times the ones that worked in the factories and the refineries, they would get their paycheck on Friday, and there would always be a bar that would cash their paychecks, and they would start drinking.
Well, but they were working overnight, so they'd get off at like 7 o'clock in the morning.
And they'd have breakfast at some bar, and I believe you remember the bars too, where the waitresses were barely dressed. They had strategically pulled
really duct tape. Good food.
Oh, yeah. You and I went for the food, right?
Right on.
So I would do these, and then I'd come up with these incredible contests to do. You know, you couldn't do shirt for shirt because, you know, the waitresses weren't wearing shirts. So I would come up, hey, play me in a game of pool. If you win, you get a rip prize. If I win, you buy me a shot of Jaeger. I was plowed.
I think everyone.
Literally plowed.
Plowed. Those were some of the most unique parties in the world because, third shifters didn't have an opportunity to go and party like that right after their air shift. Mm-hmm. I mean, for anyone else, you get off work at 5 o'clock, you can go and play.
Right.
They just didn't have that opportunity. So to put that forum in place where a huge bash, hundreds of people would show up. They'd be live broadcast.
Right.
It was cool.
Well, the flip side of that, some of the other ones that I did at Z-Rock, we went into Canada. And there was always a party Mondays and Wednesdays at Rum Runners and California's. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing. They would have me. I was doing the morning show. I had to be on at 5:30. I'd get out of the bar at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning at Rum Runners or California's, and man, I'm tanked.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd get that, I'd stop into Burger King and get those French fries with the gravy on it. I don't want to say it. Poutine? Is that what it's called? Poutine?
Yeah. Gravy and fries. Yeah.
And then I'd want to take a nap, but it's like, no, I got to get back. And I would still do the morning show, and it was just amazing.
When you got to riff, did it blow your mind? Because you had to listen to riff your whole life.
When I went into the studio for the very first time, Doug brought me down. That's when the riff was in the, what would they call it, the bomb shelter?
Yeah.
The bomb shelter.
In Royal Oak Township?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, this is the one, Royal Oak.
Okay.
Well, it'd be Oak Park.
Right.
Oak Park.
Right down the street here.
Right. But the new building, the building that Drew built was there.
And mine.
In the planning stages. But we had this... The windows weren't windows. They were these slots, rectangular slots.
Yeah, it was very much like a
bomb. And it was like a bombshell.
And the studio was in the middle of the building, it had no windows.
No windows.
Right. Yeah.
So I forget the point I was trying to make.
You said you walked into the studio
First time I walk in the studio, and Doug introduces me to Arthur. Arthur stands up, and it's immediately, hey, kid, welcome to the team. Yeah, I was waiting for him to go, baby. But
that's a good Arthur Peabody.
Oh, I had known Arthur from the Ritz, you know, hanging out, and I'd always take care of him. You know, you want a crown? Sure. We'd always, but he was always such a nice friend. Gave me just worldly advice about the radio business. You know, and you know, don't let him screw you over, Screaming. Yeah, it was always definitely. And I was like his little buddy. You know,
he ended up performing your wedding ceremony, right?
Yes, believe it or not, that was scary because it was something my wife wanted to surprise me with. Mm. So allegedly, how the story goes is she asked Doug, and Doug said, no, he ain't doing boundaries. Like, he's got to work. Blah, 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 blah. I was like, wait a minute. It's like, Art doesn't work on Saturdays. You know, I was like, ugh. So came to the actual day of the wedding. We had this small little church, or not church, but just this place where you have weddings on Harper. And all of a sudden, I'm dressed in tuxedo, and all of a sudden, boom, here's this limo popping out. Art pops out, and he is decked to the nine with the collar.
Oh, the collar. He got the collar in the mail along with the certificate to marry you.
His hair was not pulled back. It was full. Had the slash top hat, you know, and those purple little glasses.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, just a minute. Do you, Scott, take this woman? Serena, do you take her? But he did a professional job. It was just amazing.
You know what's funny is normally the bride and groom will show up in a limo.
Right.
But in his case, he shows up
in a limo.
How am I getting there? Great.
I mean, could you just imagine? You know?
I was there. I remember, man. Yeah. It was cool.
And it was like, I always wanted a rock and roll wedding. So I'm only going to do this once. And boom, Arthur Penhallow is officiating my wedding. How cool is that?
Well, I was telling you before, you know, Art had that collar on.
Mm-hmm.
And him and his date were sitting there, and she's on his lap, and they're just making out at your wedding. And I'm like, Art, you got the collar on, dude. At least take off the collar.
Art had a great time. I know he had a great time because he went out and played with the band Planet of Fun. I had them as my wedding band. And again, it was just a rock and roll wedding that was cool, but all the radio personalities in town were there.
Yeah,
that was just
cool.
Awesome.
You had a good relationship with just about everyone. Tell me about your relationship with Ann Carlini. You've known her a long time.
In between jobs, when she was at Riff, and that's when the studio was in Southfield, I believe, I'd asked her, like, hey, you know, can I come sit in your show? It's boom. But I had known Ann from way, way, way back. Back when she was at WKKI in St. Mary's, Ohio. So we had kept in touch. But as for somebody that really took me under her wing and had basically just groomed me whenever I did something wrong, I mean, just really wrong, she'd pull me aside and she would let me know. It's like, hey, straighten up here. I'm just telling you this as a friend. You got to change. You got to do this. You got to do this. It's like, you know, boom. But as for a friend.
Well, and it's amazing. A really unique quality to be able to be that straight with you, but do it in a pretty non-judgmental way to not like shame you, but give you some really good advice. Anne is always good that way.
What I miss the most right now is her laugh.
Oh, yeah.
I loved making Anne laugh.
Yep.
We were in Vegas one time, and we went on that giant wheel that they had invented. It was the subsidiary of that one they made in London, the giant Ferris wheel.
Okay.
Right? And each pod could hold about 40 people. And Meltdown was too scared to go on it, of course. So Anne's like, hey, go with me. I was like, Anne, aren't you scared? And she would sit, and I'd always tease her, hey, Anne, look out the window. No. But what if one of my favorite personalities and just such a good friend.
Yeah.
There's so much more I could say about Anne. That
you
is
know,
just fantastic.
One of the tasks or job responsibilities you had when you were doing overnight, so people probably don't know about this, but you had to perform wake-up calls for Drew and Mike.
Oh, yes. That was – it's again,
so ridiculous.
From doing a morning show of my own – and then being fans of them, even when I'm working another radio station.
Right.
When I got to the overnights, and it was just nonchalant how it first started. You know, first it was Drew going, hey, Scott. I can't do a Drew imitation. Like, hey, Scott, can you wake me up at 4:30? And then Mike would overhear, like, well, who's getting a wake-up call? I want one. You know? And Mark,
can I ask you something?
Yeah.
I never got a wake up call from you. Did anybody else on the show? I mean, Trudy never did. Did Walters?
Walters. I woke up Walters. I got
Bentley ever take advantage of the Screaming Scott wake up call service?
That's on this one. Special guest on this trip.
Of course,
funny.
He did.
Walters. Yeah,
that's
I got
funny.
Walters.
Did you wake up Drew every morning too?
Only when he requested.
Okay, but Mike was a daily thing.
Right, yeah. Mike had to, and then it's so funny because some of the times I'd wake him up and he'd fall back asleep. And then it'd turn into a promo for the weekend from them, or they'd be starting the show, and I'd still be on my way home. Because that was another thing. I had this bad eating habit of stopping at Ramshorn on the way home and eating. But that's another story. But I would listen to it, and I'd listen to the intro of the show, because the most famous intro to any morning show was the Drew and Mike show.
Sure.
You know, with the Batman mobile starting.
106 miles to Chicago.
Yeah. And then I'd wait to hear Mike, and then hear everyone in the studio like, "Ah, Mike's a little late today. He's, let's call him." But it's just.
Hey, we do have some of these recordings. This is really fun stuff.
It was a pleasure and an honor to wake up, because you never know what Mic you would get.
Right, let's give our listeners a little insight to what we're talking about.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, boy.
Oh, balls.
God damn. Oh, bitch. Fuck. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. It's Tuesday. It's that time again.
Yeah, already.
So what are you going to do about it?
Nothing. I have to just put up with it. I just have to go through it when I want to do it. That's a bunch of shit.
Exactly.
Really?
Well, can I trust that you're going to be up?
Yep.
Pause. All right. Get to work.
That's funny. There's always the moment in all the calls, because you kind of felt like he was still asleep. And then he would be like, "Oh, wait, I'm on the phone. Oh, I'm talking to you. Oh, my gosh, I have a life to live and a job to get
to." There's some on these.
Yeah.
I've got him where he's just.
So he must have got used to the fact, like, you knew if he was actually up or not, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you could tell.
I remember the one where I'd woke him up, and then he couldn't get out of his garage. The garage had broke.
Yeah, that was a very infamous day.
And he was just like,
And then nobody could find him for the longest time. And then he called because his sister picked him up and drove him in at 6:10 in the morning. He was a unique guy.
But
you want to hear the other one?
He tried so hard. I mean, he would have his television set for a timer.
You could hear it.
And he'd have two or three alarm clocks. Right. But the television was set on blare. And still wouldn't wake him up.
Here, we have another one. Let's play another one. These are classic, man.
Hello.
Oh, geez, wake up there.
Oh, God. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Here we go again, huh?
It's Thursday.
Oh, shit. Oh, boy. Supposed to be nice today?
Beautiful today.
Okay.
Sunny 75.
Oh, Christ. Oh, man. I need another 10 hours of sleep. Okay, Scott.
All right.
Have it your way. I'll get up. God, this sucks. Okay.
All right.
Okay, see ya.
See ya.
Bye.
These are priceless to have these, Scott.
I think Mike actually invented the snooze alarm, because he had asked me, I would wake him up, and then he'd go, "Hey, can you give me a call in another 10 minutes? And then it was the whole thing again. He'd wake up, balls, crazy.
You have dozens of these recordings,
yeah,
and I've been encouraging you to release these somehow online. So stay tuned, and we'll figure it out somehow, because these things are just absolutely classic. And it was a good idea to roll tape on these, by the way.
Oh, big time. I got the invitations to go flying, which never came about.
Never happened.
It was always like, after the show and stuff, we'll go fly. Or this weekend. Are you available this weekend? I'd call and I'd get the machine. You know?
Which shift did you prefer? Did you like doing that early mornings or overnights?
I did like overnights for like 12 years, and I didn't mind.
Do you get used to those hours, though?
We do. Because I got to do stuff during the day, take a quick nap, boom, and then the nightlife was there.
Right, so, true.
Sometimes I'd stop by Wild Woody's. Had a wild Wednesday, you know, with the doc, and get a little primered before I went in for my air shift. And then Doug would call the hotline. What do we got coming up? He's like, "We got Collective Soul." No, you're not going to play that one. Play this Guns N' Roses song. Doug, that's not one we normally play. Who's the program director here? I want you to play this one.
Yeah, he would call, and basically you could be his jukebox on his drive home.
And he's the boss.
Oh, absolutely. Awesome. Yeah, it was fun. Hey, so when did you go from overnights into nights?
I'm trying to really feel, again, with the it was overnights. I forget who
was that
left.
When Arthur left, didn't get
yeah.
signed.
Arthur, yeah.
Again, and then Meltdown moved into that shift.
That shift.
And then you moved
and that,
down.
That so opened that things up.
2009, yeah. That was a lot of shifts going on at that time.
Yeah.
You know, that was a big time move for Riff, but that I had was, to be cool for you.
Yeah. I hated to see Art go, though. It was like, wow.
Yeah.
It was like a punch in the gut, but it's like, man, it's like, what?
Yeah.
Where's he going to be?
Coming up.
He goes, hey, can I sit down? I go, yeah. So we sat there and talked. He talked about Detroit. Told me how, yeah, I remember in Nirvana and stuff, we played St. Andrew's Hall a couple times in the early days. I thought, wow, this is amazing stuff. And then he goes, let me get you a real beer. So he goes, gets two Guinness and comes back. And we're sitting there, again, drinking, talking stories about radio and touring and all that. Just a great guy to talk to.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
This is the history of 101 WRIF, the podcast.
The problem child, the hard one.
This is Midnight Metal on 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks. Here is Mike Staff and special guest Screamin' Scott Randall.
Midnight Metal? Actually, stuff. It was me and Doug. Again, a Wild Woodies. it was a Wild Woodies. We were sitting in the booth. He goes, I want to take things a little harder. I was like, okay, and stuff. And then we coined the phrase Midnight Metal. And then, boom, that lasted for years. Al Beck even took it on after me. And I think it was like 13 years.
Oh, nice. That's good stuff.
But it was just, we made it crazy. You know, we made it like a morning show, actually. We had Midnight Metal News. And again, Al started out as just my newscaster. Mm-hmm. And then look at him now.
Yeah, cool.
It's just amazing.
Yeah, way cool. So you've had some really cool interviews in your career. Who are some of your faves?
Yeah. Well, I'm not really noted as them, you know, because interviews, you'd always think of Steve Black, who's done some 13,000.
Right,
13,000. Yep. Meltdown and stuff has done a ton. I've had some memorable ones over the years. It's just I've lost the tapes.
Yeah.
My favorite one was Chad Smith from the Red Hot Chili Peppers comes in, and I'm filling in for Arthur in the afternoon. I don't want to come to work today. So I was filling in for him. And
did you know Chad from Toby Red?
Chad, I was a huge fan of Toby Red.
Yeah. Just for our listeners, Chad is the drummer of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, but a Detroit boy.
Right, he was with a band for Toby Red for years, and boy, He laid down some great licks on those albums. And I got a story about that also. He came in and they were promoting a new Chili Peppers album. And I got a hold of Mike Gagliano, who's our production director, and said, here's my Toby Red CD, you know, which was a bootleg copy. I said, grab a couple tracks on that and then send them in to me because everything was starting to be digitized. So Chad and I get to talk. We talk about the old days and how he became, you know, with the Chili Peppers. And the story goes, and I go, hey, I got a surprise for you. Boom. I play Every Time I Run, I Fall Down. And Chad's like, yeah. And Chad's doing this in the studio. I was like, bah, bah. And then I ask him, I was like, what's the chances of ever down the line doing a Toby Red reunion? And he goes, I'm game if the guys are. And then, boom, the phone line starting of Toby Red fans like, do it, do it, do it, do it. And I get done with the interview, and I believe it's a Sony rep, the record label rep, just comes in screaming at me like, how dare you? Like, you're supposed to be promoting the album.
And you didn't play the Chili Peppers?
Oh, no, I did play the Chili Peppers. I did. Huh. But, you know, he's a hometown boy. And yeah, Chad immediately tell the guy, he's like, dude, lay off him.
Right.
This is Screamin' Scott. Relax. They're still going to buy the Chili Peppers.
Yeah, and that record rep certainly wasn't from Detroit.
Right. On top of it, that led to eventually a Toby Red reunion. The first one they did at New York, New York. The second one at the Mount Clemens.
Hayloft Liquors, Dan?
No, not Hayloft Liquors.
Oh, the Emerald.
Emerald, yeah. Emerald Theater. And now, believe it or not, after all these years, there's Prudential Records here in Detroit are going to be re-releasing that Toby Redd In the Light album.
Nice.
And they have some live stuff that they might be releasing
that
also.
That's cool.
So it's, boom, all approved. I got to see some of the band members of Toby Redd as they're recording some of this stuff. I'd say Chuck Acasian and I think it's Pearl Sound. I think that's where they're going. But it's going to be another Toby Redd coming up for, I believe it's for a record store day coming up next year.
That's awesome. The history of WRIF, we're talking to Screamin' Scott. This is just awesome. You know, one of the things that Riff has been known for going way back into their early, early days.
Shirt for shirt.
That actually came a little later. Was just great promotions and getting people involved and also having stuff to give away that you just can't buy. Like, that's why backstage passes was always so cool because you can't buy a backstage pass. But one of the promotions we did was with Miller Genuine Draft, and it was a blind date.
Oh my God, those
were
great.
And the blind date was this idea where you would fly to a city someplace with other Riff listeners, and really listeners from all over the country at radio stations.
Right.
You'd go to a cool small venue, there'd be a big band, but you wouldn't know who it was until they took the stage.
The jocks didn't even know.
Yeah, nobody knew. So you had a couple of those, right?
We had to run, as soon as we found out who the band was, we had to run to this empty room with a bunch of phones and call back to the station. Hey, guess what?
Guess who it was. So your first one.
First one, believe it or not, I went with Ann Carlini to Chicago. And it was the Attic Theater, I believe, in Chicago. Again, they bus us in. We're ahead of the line for everybody. They're the place is just packed. And the curtain drops and boom, the Chemical Brothers go out on stage. And I thought, wow, I've never seen these guys live. It's like, I'll give them a chance. It's like, holy shit, these guys are awesome. But who could top that? So, boom, the curtain goes back up, and it was about a half hour later and stuff. And we're drinking Miller Genuine Draft here because
it was free.
Our salesperson at the time was Kathy Flesher, and still is.
Mm-hmm.
You had to drink the right beer at the right promotion.
No question about
you'd
that.
You'd hear about that.
All the rules we had to put up with.
So, good. Anticipation builds up, right? Curtain falls. This guy in a white suit, one light shining on him, walks out. It's David Bowie.
Incredible.
Mike Clark would be so jealous. But it was just awesome because it was at a time where David Bowie had came out in the press and said, I'm not doing another old song. Don't ask me for him. No more concerts. No, nothing. He came out and did every old classic and some of his new stuff.
That's awesome.
And I was just amazed.
And this was in a club that holds maybe, 1,800 people?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And just every seat was a great seat.
And then you had another one, you lucky dog.
Yes.
You went to Ireland.
Ireland.
For a blind date. Tell us about that.
I went to Ireland twice, but one was with the Miller Genuine Draft. Again, it all came down to Doug Podell going, who's got a passport? I do. You're going. It's like, okay, great. So it was 1999. Go to Ireland, and same thing. We're in this venue. No idea who the band is. Curtain's up. So I go up to the sound booth, which is in the upper balcony. And so I grab myself a beer, and I'm sitting down right next to the soundboard. And I'm wearing my Riff Varsity jacket at the time, beautiful black jacket with the leather sleeves and everything. Looking Joe Cool with my laminate and everything. WRF Miller.
Got your name on it.
And all of a sudden, a gentleman taps me on the shoulder. He says, hey, you work at Riff? And I'm going, yes. I'm turning around. It's Dave Grohl. And I'm like, holy shit, Dave Grohl, cool. And he was all clean shaven. It was before he grew the beard and everything. So I didn't really recognize him at first. But he goes, hey, can I sit down? I go, yeah. So we sat there and talked. He talked about Detroit. Told me how, I remember in Nirvana and stuff, we played St. Andrew's Hall a couple times in the early days. I thought, wow, this is amazing stuff. And then he goes, let me get you a real beer. So he goes, gets two Guinness and comes back. And we're sitting there again, drinking, talking stories about radio and touring and all that. Just a great guy to talk to. And then he reaches over and goes, hey, Screamin', you know who the secret band is? I go, no, they don't even tell us. He goes, wow, let me tell you.
Foo Fighters?
Great bands. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
He's right.
Like, Foo Fighters, ultimate Foo Fighters. He goes, no, it's not me. But I'm dating the bass player. And I kind of take this weird look back. Yeah. And then he leans in and goes, the bass player's a girl. I said, oh, cool. Okay. Yeah. And then my mind starts rolling. My mind starts rolling. I was like,
that's a short list.
Yeah. So what band's going to, I'm thinking Zombies got a girl bass player. Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah.
But what was funny is cool. I bring all these listeners half across the continent to Ireland, and Smashing Pumpkins goes on, and all our listeners, I'm watching them, they turn around and go back to the bar. And I'm going, it's like, holy cow, it's like the Smashing Pumpkins.
That was a drinking crowd.
Yeah.
Clearly. You have, of all the people that I know in this business, it seems like you find yourself hanging out with these rock stars, like in chance encounters like that. Didn't you golf with Alice Cooper?
Yes, that was great. I went down to the Z-Rock studios with the syndication because my morning show was live local. But then at that time, the rest before we programmed it in Detroit was down at the affiliate. So Alice Cooper's doing my show for a week. And it was one of the times he was just doing it from Dallas, so he didn't need me to help. But I went down to promote and to guest spot on it real quick. And so he gets off his shift, and then he's doing all these phone interviews, one after another, after another, after another. And his manager walks away, and Alice turns to me and goes, hey, Screamin', you know how to golf? I go, yeah. He goes, let's get out of here. Boom, out the back door, into a limo. And I go, wait, nice. I don't have any clubs. He goes, don't worry. Got you hooked up. You know? Go to this golf course, and we golf. And it's about third hole in. He's just laughing hysterically. And he goes, Screamin', I thought you said you knew how to play golf. I go, you suck.
How is different than being able to do it well.
I'm going, he's like, I'm not worthy. You know,
he's going in the back golfer, isn't he?
Yeah. No, he's even better. He is. Really? He could go pro if he wanted to. He's so good.
Oh, I've heard he's good, and, yeah.
And I said, you have to, Mr. Cooper, you have to call me.
You weren't calling him Mr.
Cooper. No, I wasn't calling him. But I was like, you have to understand, I can golf, but it's not every day you golf with Alice Cooper. I meant,
that was your excuse for sucking?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. And he actually is like, do this. Bring your left foot back. Don't do the Zorro swing. Bring it back slowly and everything. And boom, we had an enjoyable time. We cranked out 18 holes, came back, and his manager's like, where the hell have you been? Because we were like, oh. And he didn't drink. Didn't drink at all. And I didn't drink all. I just had some water. Just had a memorable,
now,
wonderful.
You golfed too. Actually, you golfed with a couple of other famous people. It was amazing. BJ Thomas.
BJ Thomas.
BJ Thomas is the raindrops keep falling
on my head.
How do you even meet BJ Thomas?
Well, at that time, he had done a theme song. Mark, do you remember that? He did a theme song for a TV show. I don't know if it was the one with, it wasn't the one with Michael J. Fox on it, was it?
I don't know.
Growing Pains?
Could have been Growing Pains. But BJ
Thomas.
Alan
Thicke did the Growing Pains thing because he wrote a bunch of them.
Well, BJ Thomas did one of them, some 70 or 80s theme song, and it was a big hit. So all of a sudden he was popular again. So imagine this pairing. I'm with BJ Thomas and the coach of Indiana basketball, Bobby Knight. On the same team as me and this other female jock from another station in town.
It was Growing Pains.
It was
Growing Pains. Yes.
Bravo.
Well done,
good,
man.
Good job. Nice. All right, here we go. So can you imagine that foursome?
Crazy. No. Was Bobby Knight getting pissed off every
shot? He's the most aggressive golfer I've ever seen.
I'm not surprised.
Not just so much that. It was his vocal ability. Fuck that ball. Fuck. Slice the fuck again.
Hey, tell us about your band, Chet.
Oh, yeah. That was for years in the local music scene, bands would always bring me up on stage. This goes back to the Hayloft West. Was that 22 and Ryan?
Yep, 22 like and yeah, 22 and a half.
Yeah. There was all sorts of bands, the Sofa Kings, Planet of Fun, and they'd always bring me up, you know, Shits and Giggles, you know, to, hey, let's bring the DJ up, see if he can sing. And they were all like, hey, not too bad, you know, not great, but not bad. So it was always a thing to bring me up for a while. And years went by. I was sitting with some other local Detroit musicians. I said, why don't you have a band? You're at Riff. Riff's got bands. They got the Bruiser Band.
Yeah.
They had Skeptic Tank.
Is it that?
Tank. Was that the name of the band?
Yeah. Skeptic Tank, yeah.
Oh, I thought it said Septic Tank.
Rob Shaker. Skeptic, yeah.
Like very skeptical.
Yeah. Skeptic Tank.
Yeah.
Better than Septic Tank. Yeah. So it's like, why not have a band? He's like, what time would I have? He said, well, I'll just play on a Saturday once in a while. So we put a band together, and it's been 7 years.
And the name Chet, I laughed out loud because all I could think about is saying it on the radio. Come see the band Chet.
Yeah. But the funny thing is the guys got together and said, okay, your band, you get to name it. And I thought, wow. It's like I always wanted to have a band name that was just short. You know, you got The Beatles, The Who. And it came to me. I was late night watching television, and a Cheech and Chong movie come on, and Cheech Marin hits the steering wheel and goes, Chet, man, Chet. And I got, and all of a sudden something hit me, and I was like, what a cool name. You could say a name on the radio and still not get in trouble for it because it's not a swear word, but it's close to one.
Sure sounds like it.
And it gets your attention. And,
Carlini and Meltdown wouldn't say it, though, right? They didn't want to tread on that.
It took Ann a while, but Ann finally said it. Meltdown would never say it. It was like, Scott's band is playing this benefit. You know, he wouldn't say it. But
you guys have a lot of fun, and it's not like just this novelty thing. Yeah, you guys were nominated for a bunch of music awards.
We are nominated for 4 different Detroit Music Awards.
That's cool, huh?
One for Best Single. We had a song called Selfie Song.
Yeah.
Was all about people taking selfies and how cool it was, you know. Take a picture on your phone, take a picture of your bone, take a selfie. Yeah. It was just a goofy little hit, and it took off. And boom, it was up for an award, and then all the others were best live performances, which we never won the awards.
Well,
we lost out to the Zots, what's another one? Another one of the local bands. Can't think of it offhand. That's how memorable. But we lost.
Yeah.
But we went to the party.
Right.
The party.
You brought the party.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. You're going to put it on your favorite social media. A motherfucking selfie!
My favorite part is the video has a bunch of selfies in it.
Yes.
Of course. That makes sense.
Brilliant!
What year was this?
Probably about 4 or 5 years ago.
It's great. Great stuff.
Guitar! One of our logos is We Put the F in Awesome.
Who's that on guitar? Shredding.
That was Jack Riot, I believe. And this is Local Joe. Joe Evangelista. My sidekick in crime. Cisco.
I'll tell you right now, I have never had more fun so early in the morning in my life. Hey, where's your device?
Whoa, what are you talking about?
The device.
Oh, my cell phone.
That's your cell phone. What are you doing with that? You can't put that on Snapchat.
What?
Snapchat.
What? No, you can't. You're going to get banned from Facebook. You're going to Facebook jail.
Got my whistle in there.
You take a selfie. Come on and take a selfie.
I love the lyrics.
A motherfucking selfie. Go ahead and grab your phone. Take a picture of your phone. Take a selfie.
Come on, boys.
Selfie. It's catchy. This is going to be in my head for the rest of the day now.
Oh, yeah.
So just for our listeners, though, if you want to see the videos on this, mm-hmm. you can go to YouTube and just type in Chit, C-H-I-T, the band, Chit, the Detroit band or something like that, and it'll always pop up.
A-T counts him, Riff Rock counts him down. Not another bullet, it's Chit with selfie song.
Scott, I really appreciate you having this conversation with him. It's been a lot of fun. We can't get off this interview, though, without talking about like something the listeners are not going to really know this about you. But anybody who knows you, anyone who's worked with you, friends with you, know that you are accident prone, man.
Big time.
You have had some serious rift disasters.
I'm sure Mark even has some that I don't even remember. The famous one, of course, was I was doing the overnight shift, and again, we were in the Riff bomb shelter, and we had a steel factory next to it, Eaton Steel, parked at the side. So here it is, a cold February, and one of the steel semis pull up and park right next to the building, and it's cold, so Eaton Steel isn't open. So he's running his diesel truck next to the air intake to the radio station.
Yep.
So I'm doing the show, and people are calling me up going, it's like, are you drunk? I go, nah, I'm not drunk. I'm fine. I was breathing in all that carbon monoxide. Ken from promotions comes in, checks on me, and then takes off. He's listening to the show. Then all of a sudden, you don't hear anything. And then we had a backup system. If there was dead air for like a minute or so, this tape, pre-tape would kick in. Well, as soon as he heard like Pat Benatar, which we hadn't played like in 15 years, popped on the radio station, Ken knew something was wrong. So he turned around, come back to find me passed out in the studio.
And on the floor?
On the floor. And then fire trucks are there. Next thing I know, I'm on the back porch. I'm on the back porch with some oxygen on me. Are you okay?
Oh, sorry. I'm okay. I'm
and
it was crazy.
It was just uncanny. Just now, like, hey,
it
all
is.
Things.
It's uncanny. Now, what
it's
are the
just one.
Well, yeah, what are the odds of that story happening to the same guy who gets knocked out at a St. Patrick's Day remote because the speaker falls on his head?
Yeah.
I don't remember that one.
Yeah, believe it or not, I had just done an interview with Lauren Podell from Channel 4, and Hightower, you took over for me.
Hightower told me the story yesterday.
I'm just sitting here. All of a sudden, Hightower's back running the board at the station, and I hear this thing.
Okay, I got you. You're going about just 1 minute. 1 minute to go.
I go, okay, great. So I come and I put my headphones on, and some drunk hits these Mackie speakers. Now the Mackie speakers we used were like the 1980s versions, which were about 80 pounds each on these tripods.
Yeah, they're amplified, so I had the
so huge magnets on these speakers. So some drunken idiot bounces into it, and I'm just sitting there like right in front of the microphone, and all of a sudden that thing goes. Next thing I know, I'm on the floor, and I'm hearing everyone go, oh, my God. And next thing you know,
and you got taken out on a stretcher.
Yeah, out in the stretcher. Didn't even get any green beer. I was pissed off.
I was bored up and hit a bumper, which is like something we play going into a commercial break. And all of a sudden, it's just kind of like dead air. And then I'm like, okay. And I hit the commercials because Scott's not talking. And then a promo guy gets on the mic. And he's like, Scott's down. Scott's down.
It happened again. It happened again.
Wait, so Hightower, you're like, it's my shift now.
Yeah.
Let's take over.
Big break.
Another board op to come in, and I drove out to Pat O'Brien's. And did
really? And did the live broadcast. Jimmy, so he got the green beer.
Yeah, Jimmy was drinking your beer. There's another one. There's so many of these. There's once that we were all hanging out in the promotions kind of cubicle and just shooting the breeze. And Maria's phone rings, and she answers it, and it's you. And you're just going, ah! And she's just like, what? What? Ah! Well, you're passing a kidney stone.
Oh, yeah.
And why you call Maria, I still don't know, but it's sure like you sure lived up to your name screaming Scott that day.
Oh, it's big. Well, there was the one time I was doing the Z-Rock morning show, and boom, I get an attack while I'm on the air.
A kidney stone.
A kidney stone. Oh, so I call the program director and I go, hey, dude, I'm having a kidney stone attack. So boom, ambulance shows up, right? And it's midwinter, right? Snow everywhere. So they bring up the stretcher. It's on the fourth floor. They bring me down the stretcher. And so I wouldn't keep cold, they put the blanket over my head to keep me warm.
You look like you're dead.
So the next thing is like, morning radio news personality, ODs on the air, and telling people like, Screaming Scott is dead. You know, my friends are like, ah, he could have not. I was like, no, they were just keeping me warm because it was cold. I came back, in a few days, like, wait a minute, you're not dead. Oh, my God.
Now, you had a real scare, though, in 2005, right? You had a heart attack?
2005. I was living it up good. Again, back to that lifestyle of doing the overnights, and I would go to Ramshorn and get a Country Boy Special Plus after the Drew and Mike show kicked on, and I go home and eat that. No exercise, just go to bed, wake up, smoke Marlboro cigarettes and Marlboro Reds, love them. And so, was it great? So
it wasn't
out.
Great.
Wasn't a great idea.
Coming up.
Okay, Mr. Randall, we're going to wheel you in the back. We're going to run some tests. They said that was the last thing I said. They said I was in the wheelchair and went,
Just passed out?
Just, no, dead. I had flatlined right there.
Whoa.
Flatlined right there in the lobby.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
101 minutes of non-stop rip rock. This is the history of WRIF, the podcast.
Party with the Rip all weekend long because it's Big Daddy's Foreplay Weekend on 101 WRIF. Rip rocks, baby.
Here is Mike Staff and special guest Screaming Scott Randall.
So I'm at a local hall, it was called the Imperial House, and was with Jay Hudson, who was working at the station at the time. And he was dating somebody who owned it, and the boss and manager comes out and goes, hey, Screaming, we got this incredible drink for you. Somebody took Jägermeister and Red Bull, and you drink them at the same time. You could party for hours. Try some. So I was like, hey, that sounds like a great idea. Shroomp, did one. Hey, what do you know? I got all this energy. It's like 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'm not tired. So I do another one. I did about 12 or 13 of these things. I went to go to bed, and again, all the signs. You feel like you have an elephant sitting on your chest.
It's got to fool you after drinking that much. You got to just think like, oh,
well,
man,
I'm on this caffeine high. So I go to my future wife and go, hey, on your way to work, can you drop me off at 19 Garfield, which was a hospital there. I forget the name. They've changed it 10 times by now. And so I'm in the lobby, and they go, why are you here? I said, well, I'm really not feeling good. I'm getting all the signs. The left arm is tingling a little bit, just not feeling good. Okay, so they come, they put the bracelet on me. I'm in a wheelchair, and they put the bracelet on. Okay, Mr. Randall, we're going to wheel you in the back, and we're going to run some tests. They said that was the last thing I said. They said I was in the wheelchair and went,
Just passed out?
Just, no, dead. I had flatlined right there.
Whoa.
I flatlined right there in the lobby. Next thing you know, they told me later, the code blue was on, they rushed me in the back. And it pissed me off for one thing. I fought for ages to get a Drew and Mike hoodie, a red Drew and Mike hoodie. And the first thing they do, they take the scissors. Slice it. And then they gave it back to me, of all things. I still got it.
Kind of a good trade-off, though, wouldn't you say?
So, again, no pulse. I am like dead. Those paddles you see on the TV shows.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, clear. They had to do it twice. And the marks that they leave are just like somebody taking a hot iron and going.
You still have marks?
Not now, but at the time.
Wow.
Those things hurt.
How long were you dead?
I have no idea. But when I came to and had a pulse, they slapped me around. It's like, Mr. Randall, do you know why you're here? And I go, yeah, you just told me you're going to run some tests.
Wow.
I said, no, you just died. We just brought you back to life. And I went, oh, cool. And I turned, and all that Jägermeister that I had, everywhere, all over the floor.
Wow.
And immediately and stuff, they put me into surgery. They went through the leg, and I had an artery that was 99% blocked, which was, they said, the Widowmaker one.
Wow.
Cleared it up, gave me a stent, came back, took some time off, came back to the radio station. First person that sees me is Arthur. I said, Arthur, I got a stent. Trying to catch up to me? I've got more than you, buddy. Don't worry about me. Don't worry, you're a youngster. I only got a few.
Do you, you don't remember being dead? You don't remember anything from it?
No light?
No light.
No light, no.
So that scared me.
I guess you're going the other way then.
So, that started a lot more charitable work in my organization, the Screaming Angels.
Well, yeah, I do want to talk about that, but like, how does it really change your perspective of life when somebody says, do you die?
Yeah, you died. At the time, because I was probably still hungover.
Right.
Wow, cool, dude. You know, it took me a while. You'd think I'd quit smoking.
Didn't happen.
Didn't happen.
You're still smoking?
Nope. No, I haven't had a cigarette in about 7 years.
Oh, good.
That's only because of the other heart surgery. that was the big one. That was 7 years ago, the open heart surgery.
I've got to believe, though, that it drives home the point that we're finite creatures. We're not going to last forever. You don't really think about it until something like that happens.
I burned the candles at both ends, sideways, upside down. I had a hell of a radio career in the beginning where I thought I was invincible.
Yeah.
You know? Because there's been so many times that we'd do a riff party and I'd go on the air. And my friends would be back at my house still partying and go, how could you do that on a Sunday morning? You know, they'd give me a Sunday morning early shift where, you know, you'd play pre-recorded programs, but then there would be 2 hours of you. And you'd try to sound – my voice sounded great being all hungover and everything. 101 WRIF. Here's Pearl Jam. You know.
That's a tall price to pay for a deep voice on the radio. That's for sure. So is that that event? Is that what kind of like puts you down the path of really
not
helping
really
other people? Because I always remember you.
I thought you meant from the heart attacks.
I'm saying like you've always been a really compassionate guy. You've always been the guy that will help out.
Yeah.
You don't have to ask you twice to do something. But it seems like you really started doing some charity work. Like you were intentional about doing charitable work.
It just come from listeners that would say, hey, can you help me out? Can you mention this on the air? And I'd always go, let me do one better. Let me go host it for you and talk about it a little more and get more people in.
Yeah, that's so cool, dude.
And that went from just doing charitable work at a bar or hosting a bowling benefit, which was really cool at the time. You don't see them anymore because we can't.
Right.
Unless you're immediate family. And it just rolled over, and then I thought, it's like, let's put an organization together. So I came up with four or five of my other friends, and we came up with the Screaming Angels. So we would do any kind of benefit, and then it worked even better when the band got involved because the band would play at certain benefits. And it just snowballed to the point where I wanted to get the local rock scene into the idea. So Jimmy Clapp, who owned a bar called the Doghouse at the time, came up with this idea to have rock for tots instead of toys for tots because we had done a benefit and found the Marines would just put the toys in a warehouse and they'd sit a year before they'd get to the kids on Christmas. I'm like, that ain't right. Let's get them to the kids now because they need them. So I joined up with him when we started the first rock for tots. And then that spawned, we've done 13 years of it. This year was really hard. But again, it's exploded to where we'd have 20 bands to now our biggest one. We've had almost 60 bands at a 2-day period. Each band playing about half hour to 45 minutes. And we're now at Freddy's Bar and Grill. It's our home for Rock for Tots. And again, this year was hard, but we still raised a little over $5,000 and a ton of toys.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that is no small feat to put together when you're talking about that many moving parts. That's pretty awesome. And you've also – I know you've just done a ton of work. Weren't you a celebrity bell ringer for the Salvation Army? I can only imagine you doing that.
It became a quest because the first year I did it, they said, well, you did okay. Well, they put me at like 8 Mile.
Like you did okay? Like you didn't do a great job ringing the bell?
No, I used my triangle because that's the big thing in Chet. I don't know if you can see it on the T-shirt.
Oh, lead triangle, Scott.
Lead triangle. I mean, anybody can play a cowbell, but how many bands have a triangle?
It's like that commercial. What was that commercial with the triangle guy?
Yeah,
that was the best.
So, I got involved with the Salvation Army, and they would always ask the local media to do celebrity bell ringers. So I'm doing it for a few years, and then I got a third place 1 year, and then a second, and my last one that I did a couple of years ago, I was 2019, first place, raising the most money. Because awesome. I'd put the word out, and thanks to social media also,
right,
getting people to come out, and they would come out and support me in droves. And it's like, cool. Yeah. It was cool. One of the years, they asked us to decorate the kettle that we are using. So I thought, what better kettle? I wish I could show you a picture. I made an Eddie Van Halen kettle with the stripes and everything.
Frankenstein, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it was awesome. Sweet. That was 2017 I did that one. That was awesome.
So, Scotty, I know that it's still kind of tough to talk about this, but I got to ask you about it because I know your fans haven't really heard you tell the story, but in April of 2020, after 24 years, out of the blue.
And April 1st.
That was the end. Rick fired you.
I got the call from the general manager, and I could tell. First, he left a message on my phone. I didn't answer it in time. And I still got that message. And it's just like I could just tell in the sound of his voice, because we're all waiting for contract renewal. And we're just waiting and waiting. It's, everything's fine. And so I got that call. He's like, hey, Screaming, can you give me a call back? Gave me a call back, and it was he was more in tears than I was.
Wow. He's on the phone?
On the phone saying, we're going to do some stuff. I hope you understand. Things are crazy right now. It's a crazy business. And I understand. With everything that was going on in COVID, we did the best we could with what was happening at the time.
Yep.
And so for me to be pissed off after 24 years was just wasn't in the cards. I just, hey, it happens. Well, let's see where we go from here. Because the one thing I didn't want to do is when Channel 7, 2, 4 all asked for comments and social media, I put out a pretty cool statement saying how thankful I was because I've been, you know, working with Mark and Drew and Mike and even the new guys, as well as Ann Carlini for so many years. I mean, I've got just
Art.
Art. Hey, give me some of that Screaming money. I had a good run. I still got some left in the tank.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. But again, it was hard. But again, right back into it, just to keep my name out there, I kept the Screaming Angels going, just doing benefits after jumping on anybody that we could throughout this whole COVID thing of still trying to help people.
Yeah.
So I've been doing that in the meantime. My buddy Joe Evangelista and I came up with the Pancho and Cisco broadcast that we were doing for a while till he had a heart attack, and he's recovering. So we still have those online. We might be doing some in the near future. Yeah. But
We all know when we get into radio, you hear it all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, radio.
You're fired!
It's a very finical business, and they say you're never anybody in radio until you've been fired twice.
Right.
And it happens. It doesn't make it any easier. No. 24 years is a heck of a great run on one radio station.
So.
That's the common theme that I get when I am talking to a lot of the Riff DJs over the years that we've had in the history of WRIF. The common thread is that people have stayed on the air at Riff longer than any other radio station.
Right.
It just doesn't really happen.
Well, you look at Jim Johnson. Jim Johnson went from Riff to
Wheels,
from Wheels to OMC.
He's on CSX too.
CSX too. I mean, he's bopped around like who? I mean, my plan at one time was be at Z-Rock to Riff to CSX, and then there was Magic. We had Magic 105.1, and then
age yourself with the audience.
Yeah, great. But I was always hoping that maybe as I got older, that since Alan Allman was out of the picture, that boom, Soothing Scott would come around and
soothing. I love it.
Soothing Scott on 100 WNIC.
So, Scotty, as we...
it's the witching hour.
As we approach Riff's 50th birthday.
I'm going home and going to bed, but I didn't say sleep.
I mean, could you just imagine? Imagine the chicks that would be calling in.
I kind of can. You know, the thing with Alan Allman, though, nobody knew what he looked like. I mean, he did a really good job. I don't know if that's possible with the internet now.
I mean, look at my nose. Do you think I should be silhouetted, too?
Yeah. Face for radio, right?
Exactly.
So, hey, with Riff approaching its 50th birthday, yes. Riff has accomplished something very few mm-hmm. radio stations of any format in anywhere in the world has mm-hmm. done. When you look back on Riff's history, what do you think it is about Riff, the Riff audience, Detroit, that sustains a radio station like WRIF?
Well, for one, I mean, it's easy to say the music and how the music changed. But this is one station, you know, just besides the Oval that is famous on its own. Yeah. You see it everywhere around the world. Anybody that is out somewhere and sees, like, hey, I know that station in Detroit.
Yeah.
It was the personalities. I mean, you grew up with them, went through life episodes with them. I mean, everyone, you know, from, you know, again, the Carl Coffees, the Arthur Penhallows, the Doug Podells, the Ann Carlinis, the Mike Staffs.
Yeah, like, you know, Karen Savali, Ken Calvert. Yeah, there's so many.
Karen, yep. You know. Just so, I mean, even the ones, Nick Demos.
Right, oh yeah.
Nick, you got to bring up Nick Demos. He was a great, great kid.
Yeah.
Greg, what was it? Greg Norman?
Greg Morgan,
yes. Boy, did he have a voice.
And Mike the Rock Dog Siegel. Man, yeah. There's another guy. That
Heart player.
Great rock DJ.
Yes.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's just the amount of talent for so many years.
Well, and, you know, the way I kind of explain it now is that before the internet, mm-hmm. radio was way different. It meant something different to the listeners because right. radio is where you went mm-hmm. to get the new music, to hear what's right. coming, you know, what's going on in the rock radio world. You found out about concerts from listening to the radio.
Right.
That's your connection to this world of this incredible music. And with the internet, though, yeah. it's just, you know, it almost diminishes the importance of the radio DJ mm-hmm. a little bit because you can get everything as soon as you want it. I mean, you get a notification if your favorite band's coming to town.
Right. Even as a kid, I used to wait and try to get on Peter Werby's show just to say a stupid joke or something. And that lasted forever. That was a long talk show that lasted
yeah.
forever.
Oh, yeah. I think it was the longest running yeah. talk show for sure. So what's next for Screamin' Scott? What's in your future?
Well, lunch. I mean, they got a spread here, right?
Yeah.
Are we going to get
Yeah, go raid Drew's fridge.
it's an open book. And again, with every chapter is a new challenge, a new goal. The radio market's got to know that people go, I want to come home to somewhere.
Yeah, Scott's
available. So who knows?
Yep.
Again, I keep an open mind. I got my little podcast, which, you know, doesn't pay the bills, but...
What's the name of the podcast? You could promote it here.
Poncho and Cisco in the Afternoon.
Nice. There it is. And you can also
find... because I couldn't use the Screamin' Scott thing for a little while because I was wondering, legalities, do they own my name?
Right.
Yeah. I want some of that screaming money.
Or does Z-Rock own
your
name?
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. Who does own that?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I actually even got sued when I first started using that.
Hmm.
When I came to Ref... there was actually a lawsuit, and it's funny because guess who sued me?
Who?
Screamin' Scott from Sha-na-na.
Oh, really? That's hilarious.
And so we dropped the G.
Oh.
It became Screamin' Scott.
Interesting.
Oh, that's fascinating.
You heard that here, right here on the History of WRIF.
Sha-na-na, Bowser.
Yeah.
Well, Scott, I love knowing you. I love being your friend. We've known each other a long time. It's
good we didn't bring up some of the nights that we went out and tied one on. How come that didn't get in the podcast?
There's been a few that I don't remember. And we've definitely had a lot
I remember this one night at the Ritz, you, Nick, and I, and it was the Black Crowes concert.
Nick Demos?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, but Scotty, you've been an instrumental part of the Riff history. I mean, being a part of basically half of its life. So,
on behalf of
your listeners, thank you for all the great radio and all the enthusiasm that you've given us for Riff and for rock and roll. And we're really looking forward to seeing what the next act is going to bring.
Hey, I can't wait.
Hey, Screamin' Scott on the history of WRIF. Want to thank Mark Fallhauer for engineering. Mark, appreciate it.
Yeah, pretty simple.
Appreciate Hightower. Shoot the video. We'll have the video out. And stay tuned. We do have Doug Podell coming up on a future edition of the History of WRIF and a few more as we lead up to Riff's 50th birthday. So thank you for listening.
All right.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.